Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. That was a song by John about a life that you're looking for, and he has joined us live. I'm going to pull him in a second. Tonight's topic is about Jonah and the whale. There was a good discussion about it at church tonight, and I'm just going to start out with one passage. I am going to discuss more than one passage, but I'll start out with one. So, first of all, Jonah had a dilemma because he didn't think that God should even go to the trouble to try to notify Nineveh that they would be destroyed because they were already a wicked city. So here was his dilemma, Jonah 3:10 through 4:4. When God saw what they did, how they turned from their evil ways, God changed his mind about the calamity that had said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. But this was very displeasing to Jonah, and he became angry. He prayed to the Lord and said, "O Lord, is not this what I said while I was still in my own country? That is why I fled to Tarshish at the beginning, for I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love, and ready to relent from punishing. And now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it is now better for me to die than to live." And the Lord said, "Is it right for you to be angry?" So let's backtrack a minute. First, God told Jonah to go to the city of Nineveh and tell them that if they did not repent in 40 days, they would perish. Nineveh was in the heart of the Assyrian Empire, which is modern-day Syria. They were one of Israel's fiercest enemies. But he was stubborn and didn't think it was worth his time. So he booked a trip out of the seaport of Joppa to Tarshish. Because he disobeyed, God sent a violent storm, and people started blaming Jonah because they heard through the grapevine. The crew that was on the ship heard through the grapevine that he disobeyed God and didn't follow directions. So in the end, they threw him overboard. And then he ended up in the belly of the whale for 3 days. Finally, he realized God was right after all this stubbornness. And he said in verse 2:9, "Salvation comes from the Lord." Then God allowed the fish to cough him up on dry land. And by the time he got to Nineveh and preached the message, the Ninevites wore sackcloth and covered themselves in ashes and repented. Then Jonah questioned God again. God created a tree for him that would grow and cover up the hot sun. And then Jonah complained again because God allowed the tree to wither, and then he was forced to face the heat and the hot sun, waiting for the prophecy to take place. But it never did, and in the end, God spared all the residents of Nineveh. So with that, I'll bring John in. Hi, John.
Hello, Jane Hoffman.
I did not invite Don or Albert. Don from the Assyrian Empire.
Well, that's too bad. It would have been a fun circus with them.
Well, since you've already left the circus, I'm leading you to the elephant tent.
I see. So
are you home yet?
No, actually, I'm with the hound. It's been a little warm today. Not hot, but it's been muggy, a little bit a lot of humidity. It's about 75% humidity. So it just feels warm even when it's not warm.
Yeah, we experience that in the Midwest sometimes, quite a bit.
I would think.
And
I hear
you
like
guys
Chicago
are...
in that area. Now, you're up by the Great Lakes, so you get a lot of moisture and humidity off of the lakes, right?
We had a perfect summer, but our humidity didn't hit till around September 1st. And this month it has been rather humid.
Uh-huh. Now, does it get beyond 75%, you know, like 80 or 90? Or...
Some days it was, last week it was dripping humid a few days. But like I said, we had unusually non-humid weather this summer. So We've only had like 15 to 20 days of it, and of those days, maybe 3 days were super bad. We've avoided most of the problem.
Well, my dad was a Midwestern boy from Geneseo, Illinois, and my mom was a Valley girl to a degree, born and raised in Canoga Park. And so she was used to warm weather from the valley, but they got married. They tried living a year over there in Illinois. And after about one summer of and winter, my mom said, some nights it was so humid that she went to the bathtub, put cold water in there, just sat in the water. Because outside of it, she said, you just sweat and you sweat. After about a year, she told my dad, go west, young man. And they did.
Yeah, in Nebraska and Kansas, it's even worse because they have higher heat combined with humidity.
Yeah, we lived in Nebraska for a couple of years, and it was an adventure to say, but I'm pretty spoiled to California weather. It's made me very soft. I don't apologize for it. This is where they'll have to drag me away from this place.
So if you were Jonah and God grew you a bush overnight and then he sent a worm to eat it, which is what really happened, and then would you complain to God that he removed the shade?
No, I would roll with whatever he said. But if he said move to Chicago for, a year, I could do it. If he said for the rest of your life, I would say it'd be like Jesus in the garden. Like, could you make this cup pass from me? I'd pray it three times at least. I mean, I had a chance to get married and live in Chicago but the problem was it was going to be for the rest of my life. And I just couldn't do that just with the weather. Just couldn't do it.
I remember that I knew you at that time.
Yeah.
Was it Shasta?
No, it was a gal named Betsy, and she had her family had a business out there, and so we would have taken over, the family business, and it would have been good from a business point. Probably if I could handle cold weather, it would have been a no-brainer, but I'm just really temperature sensitive. It's just not my thing. Maybe if I was like 6 foot and 200-some pounds, it'd be different, but I'm 5'6", 140. I just don't carry a lot of extra blubber and you really need that for the winter. I mean, whales have it, and Eskimos, they got their all their gear.
I guess
that
you're
wear.
Putting me in the blubber category. Did you know Chicago's on Lake Michigan and the wind comes from three different directions and they call it the Windy City? So it's not quite as humid as other parts of the Midwest.
I knew they called the Windy City. I didn't know it came from three points. I know that when the Cubs play, they'd have these games, because I love baseball, and there would be these games where they would tell you, today the wind is blowing out. And if it was blowing out, you could hit a little pop-up, and that baby would go for a home run. And then the same ball, when the wind's blowing in, you could shoot it with a cannon, and it's gonna come back, So, but most of the time the wind would blow out, and
it's called the Northwest Canadian wind, and sometimes the wind came south from Gary, Indiana, and that's why they call it the Windy City.
Well, it's one of those things where you really get familiar with wind and weather patterns. Like when I was in Nebraska, they always would say we had these, Rocky Mountain winds, and it would come down from the Great North, from Canada. And so we were very aware of Canada. Now in Southern California, anything comes from Canada, it just doesn't get over here. It's just a little too far. Probably if you lived in Washington or Oregon, but when you're in the Midwest, it's like, oh yeah, here comes a cold weather front from, the Great White North.
Right.
And
all you guys get is Santa Anas in January. Now, we do have only a 45-minute show, but finish your thought.
Yeah, and then we have El Nino, and I don't even understand El Nino, or they talk about it all the time. But Jonah is a very interesting case study as far as kind of the one of the most interesting prophets, because you really see a lot of his emotional temperament. He's a character, and it's displayed more so than I think the other prophets. Where they kind of just go with the program. God tells them to do something and they do it. With Jonah, you got this kind of, he questions God. He doesn't want to do stuff. He gets mad, and he's kind of got in a world of his own.
Stand out. One thing that stands out that I read about is that Jonah found it puzzling that God even protected people he considered evil. And then another conclusion was God commands everything in his creation, from weather to a whale, to carry out his plan. And God is fully in control. And then Jonah spent the same amount of time, 3 days inside a whale, as Jesus did in a tomb. And Christ also preached salvation to the lost. Oh, also, what did he look like after he came out of the whale? Like,
well, they were saying that if
the Ninevites still listened to him, even though he looked probably very strange with acid on him.
I'm wondering if God protected him from that, or if he just looked so horrid that people would listen to whatever he said, like he'd be this UFO creature coming to visit them.
It says in this one Bible study that I read online, some scholars believe Ninevites paid attention to Jonah because of his bizarre appearance. They speculate the whale's stomach acid bleached Jonah's hair, skin, and clothing to be ghostly white. So you were pretty much on target with that guess.
Also, could you imagine what he smelled like? And I guess God protected him, I would think that, he would have been digested, or I don't know the process. I do know that animals a lot of times are opened up, and like alligators and other creatures that they'll find other animals inside them. Even sometimes these other animals crawl out of them or eat through them. So I guess there's probably a period of survival, and since a whale has to have oxygen or whatever, it's called a fish. I didn't say it was a whale, but it's a big fish.
Yeah.
And it needed air, so I guess he was able to survive with the air that came in there. But still, you got to figure, if you're inside something's stomach for 3 days, you're probably going to smell not that great.
I believe it really happened. One of the things I read at the beginning, which I think you heard, is he grew a bush to cover Jonah in the heat, but then Jonah complained when the bush withered. So I think that relates to our life. Like when God provides some kind of relief or comfort, but it's not good enough for us, and we ask them, well, why did I have to suffer in the end anyway?
Yeah, and I think that sometimes we don't miss things until we don't have them. We always don't appreciate what we have till it's gone. And I think that's just human nature. And so it's one of those things where we're always complaining. I know several people where they live to complain. That's their life. If you took that away from them, they wouldn't have anything to talk about. It literally motivates them to just complain about what's wrong. And we all do it. I mean, to some degree. If you sit and talk with someone for a few minutes, if they're married, they're going to talk about their partner or the things aren't right. If they're talking about the job, they're going to talk about their boss or customers, things that usually go wrong. And if you talk about sports, it's like what's wrong with their team, the manager. Oh, sports talk is nothing about people calling in and complaining about what the manager decided. And people are as fickle as poo. You know, literally, you know, a coach puts in a guy, and the, you know, this guy strikes out. Well, the coach is a bum. If the guy hits a home run, the coach is a hero. And yet the coach has nothing to control, you know, because sports is fickle. You know, you're hot one day, you're cold the next day. It has practically nothing to do with the manager a lot of times.
Well, in our church Bible study, we were talking about how Jonah was resentful about the outcome, that he went to all that trouble and then God saved the Ninevites. And then in the Bible study at church, it said, we may shake our head at Jonah's audacity. Saved from the sea, given multiple chances to get it right, he still wants to withhold from others the mercy God gave him. Yet it's not hard to imagine scenarios in which I would find mercy as impossible as Jonah does. A school shooting, an ISIS attack, the betrayal of a friend who never shows remorse or takes responsibility. Can we, with the advantage of God's eye view of Jonah, understand why God would show mercy on the wicked city of Nineveh? Can we imagine that God would show mercy to our enemies and to us?
Right, and I think there is that element with people that are of religious faith. They believe they're right. I believe I'm right. Everyone who has a faith system in God, you're believing, or you're buying into the fact that there's a supreme authority, that there's this higher law or royal commandment. And so we want to be right. We want to be right no matter what, because we have to be right, because we believe in God and the other person doesn't. So there's a certain thing of, we kind of want to see the world get judged and Armageddon and everyone, you know, finally we can say, see, I told you so, I told you so. And yet the God really isn't going to get off on judgment. He really wants everyone to come to salvation, to find answers, to reconcile with them. That's really what he wants. But he's not going to get that. And that's human nature. It's just the way people roll. So there is a certain part of nature where we want to see people get judged. I didn't even think about this day. You know, there are some people I know that are really mean people. Like, they're really... They have like, there's this guy.
They have a hardened heart, right?
Yeah, there's a gym here at where I work, and it's for the community, and I have access to it because I have keys, and I've paid the rent here, and I spend more time here than the people that live here. It's like I live here. So every once in a while, I'll go into the gym and just do a quick workout, bum a little workout, or, you know, get water, or I need to, you know, rinse off or use a bathroom. You know, it's just like a couple of minutes. And there's people here that it could be 3 a.m. I'm just working out in a little corner by myself, and a person will come in and you're working out. Hey, how you doing? I'm fine, you know. So where do you live? It's like, oh, you know, I'm in one of the units. Oh, and after they talk a few minutes, it's like they just want to find out if you have access to the gym or whatever. And they're like, they get all pissed off. Like, I don't think you belong here. I don't think you're a member or whatever. And you're sitting there going, it's 3 a.m. There's nobody here. I'm in a machine 40 feet away from you. It has nothing to do with you. I'm not bothering you in any way. Why could you care a rip that someone's, you know, like, it has no effect on you? And like, if I show up 20 minutes earlier and you're not around, you don't even know I'm here. It's not like, you know, oh, I'm using up your food or your water, or I'm taking
it has to do with human conditioning and positioning. And I think it has to do with people who are either naturally suspicious, or they always have to position themselves in life. And I was going to tie this into what's going on in the national electorate right now. For example, is America cursed or blessed with the presence of a Donald Trump candidacy? Like, I haven't really given him the time of day, but let's just say God has, and I doubt that God has, because of his natural tendency to privilege and rank and lack of repentance. But let's just say God has given Donald Trump a chance. Would I see him through different eyes if I was more conditioned to his responses? And if America, I was watching a special of Vladimir Putin tonight, how he basically kills anybody around him. He killed three investigative journalists that he disagreed with and a couple other people that were in high-ranking positions, like their legislature. And basically, he was a nobody until he came to power, and now that's the way, that's how he deals. But he did support George W. Bush during the aftermath of 9/11. But then as time went by, he wanted more leverage and more power. Like, he gave America access to a tracking point in Azerbaijan, which Russia controlled a long time. But then he wanted, he said he wanted to be invited to NATO, and he didn't realize it was the type of thing you have to apply for. And as time went on, he wanted more rewards in offerings for what he was giving. But there was always a catch. And by the time Obama took office, the demands got worse. And as you know, he made some negative moves in Georgia, the state of Georgia in Russia, and also tried to overtake the Ukraine. He actually poisoned a candidate in the Ukraine that he didn't want to get elected. But the guy lived through the poisoning, and 15 days later he was better and he got elected. And then the guy, Putin, had egg on his face. So what you're saying is, in the gym, is in, especially in California, because I spent time in Yale's unit in that shishi poo poo place in Marina Del Rey, where they had like a fancy jacuzzi and a couple other gym areas. Somebody probably would have questioned me there if they hadn't seen me there before.
People get very territorial about their stuff, and I understand that, but there's a certain, call it meanness, a certain attitude, and I think in a certain way, Trump actually would be better suited to deal with the villains of this world than a very diplomatic, nice person, a Jimmy Carter kind of person, an Obama kind of person, even a Hillary kind of person. By that I mean, we're not in polite society. We're not dealing in the world with morally kind people. We're talking that half of the world are run by alpha dogs who have gotten to the top by killing off their competition or manipulating and strong-arming people. And that's a different environment. That's a street fight. That's dealing with thugs. And yet they're in high circles. So it's a very interesting world. The psychology of this is amazing. And we'll see, you know, we'll see the last person standing, man or woman, when the election comes. But it's a process where when you start dealing with uncivilized people, the question is, how civil can you be to be effective and to survive? And when you're dealing with a terrorist, when you're dealing with an ISIS person, when you're dealing with a drunk at the corner, do you use common courtesy? Do you use your manners and just kind of back up to them? Or do you take force and take them out? And unfortunately,
you know, it's
this
funny
is
that you mentioned that, because in Job 3, the Bible verse that we discussed a few weeks ago about the life of Job, when Job gets to the point where there's boils all over his body and he cursed God, there's an implication in chapter 3 that God only rewards those that are just, and he always punishes the unjust. But in the because we are in the end times, we do see people who are unjust that are being unduly rewarded, like narcissistic people who keep climbing to the top versus the people who are humble and don't get any recognition or relief. So well, we do have a caller, so should I check to see if the caller wants to talk?
Oh, go for it.
I just want to warn everybody, we only have about 15 minutes of the show. We're going back to premium in about 3 days, so let me just check if this person wants to talk. Hello, someone from the 407, would you like to weigh in?
Yes. Yeah, my name is Nathan in Orlando, and I'd love to weigh in on your conversation. You guys, I wish I just ran across it a few minutes ago, and I wish I would have been here at the beginning.
Sure, no problem. And normally we do an hour to 2 hour show, but we will be going back to that at the end of the week. So, what
okay.
would you like to say?
Well, I would like to talk. I was looking at your. I'd like to comment one on your title of your show. Jonah didn't trust God, and neither do Americans. I'd like to share an insight on that, and I'd also like to share an idea on you guys' question. And that's what I originally called in on, was your title, and then you guys got to talking about the Donald Trump and you know, mm-hmm. trying to sort out if it was God's will if he was to win or not, you know.
Sure, I would like to hear what you have to say. John
okay.
is generally a Republican and I'm generally a Democrat, so we have a mixed company here. Go ahead and tell us what you're thinking.
Okay, am I on the air now?
Yep, you sure are.
Yeah. Okay. This is just an insight about Jonah. Jonah, when he went to Nineveh, Jonah went there. His reluctance to go there was, and I learned this in a study years ago, really interesting experience, but he didn't want to go there and share the gospel because he knew that God would is a God of mercy, and he would give these people a second chance. His grace would, you know, not allow him to destroy him. And the reason Jonah wanted him to destroy him is these people had come and taken over Israel, conquered him, and Jonah had his own family had been killed by this. And I know, you know, he's struggling with the issue of forgiveness. If someone did that to my family, the hardest thing in the world would be to wish that God would give them their mercy. I would want to see them live the judgment of God. And this is a funny thing about that. God commanded him, in all his reluctance, he kept running and running, and God kept moving him in the direction of Nineveh. And whenever he finally said, and when he was in the belly of the whale, he didn't start making deals with God like we do. Like, oh, God, if you let me out of here, I promise you I'll do this for the rest of my
mm-hmm.
life. He didn't do that. He worshiped God in the whale. Only on who God is, his character, how great God is. And then that caused him to, well, I ain't going to say it caused him, but that's all he did. And then the whale spit him up onto the land. He went to the land, to the city, and he was commanded, it was a 3 days journey. To walk through this city, it would take him 3 days. He walked one
right.
day. And so he doesn't get credit for evangelizing the city. The king does, because somebody heard the message, ran and told the king what he said, and the king said, the evil king of the city did what Jonah was supposed to do. But Jonah, and I'm amazed at that, because, you know, when we let God down, God's still committed to getting this guy that he was going to use you or I to reach. So that is God's love. And I really like that. But here's the thing on Donald Trump.
Thank you for
Trump.
Clarifying that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I pieced together the Bible study, and I just thought it was funny that Jonah, even though he was able to deliver the message and the outcome was different, he still became angry. But at that particular point, he didn't understand his purpose in the whole thing.
Well, let me give you a brief experience of how this is so exciting to me. I got saved in 1980, and I went into a church, and I was not church culture. I mean, I didn't look like it. I didn't smell like it. I didn't anything like it, like church culture. And I was like, there's this wall between me and these people. Well, they have this singles class, and I go there, and I'm not church culture. Like I said, I wasn't raised in the church, and I wasn't these pretty prim people that you see in this service. But it was a small singles group, and I was a single, but I wasn't in the group. I was just there and wanting to learn, and I was reading through the book of Jonah, and I got this question: why did he not want to go? You know, we would all get. I got saved, and I got a chance to share what God had done in my life with some people, and I was excited about it. Why would he not want to do that? And then he goes, and he's fighting God all along. And I go to this Bible study, and the guy that taught the class, he at the end of his study, he would open it up for anybody who had questions, and it didn't have to be on what he was teaching. Anything in the Bible, if you had a question, you could ask him. Well, I raised my hand, and I was talking about what I'd seen in Jonah, and I asked him, why did Jonah not want to go? And right there in front of everybody, he just pointed his finger at me, and he said, Nathan, I don't know what God's telling you to do, but you need to quit running from God and just obey him. That literally knocked me on the floor, figuratively. But I got up and I walked out of there. I got embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
I got embarrassed. I didn't know what he was talking about. And so I got up and I walked out, and I never went back to that. Years later, I was in the military, and I was taking a correspondence course from a college. I was in Korea. And one of the things, it was a Bible course, and one of the things they wanted me to do was do a study on the book of Jonah. So I'm like, okay, maybe I'll get my question answered about this. And I was studying it, and I had to go into extra-biblical history to try to find out what was. And they're saying that this guy Jonah, his family got beheaded, their bodies hung up on the wall of the city, you know, for an example. And it's like, wow, I wouldn't want to do that. I wouldn't want to go tell them people about God either, you know. And so that was what got me excited about that. Then I went to the church as a tourist, went to the Dr. Paul Cho's church in South Korea.
Wow.
Yeah, that was neat. And we went through, and they were just giving us a tour, telling us. And one of the things that happened to Dr. Paul Cho when he was a little boy and during the war, his mother had gotten stabbed with a bayonet by a Chinese soldier, and a Chinese soldier jumped on his. He was a little boy, jumped on him and broke his ribs, punctured his lungs, and these missionaries took him off and nurtured him back to health. And then, you know, he becomes the pastor of this largest church in the world then. And then one day God told him, I want you to take the gospel to the Chinese. And he wrestled with it. He fought God. He didn't want to do it. And it's like, ain't this? I'm glad I learned in the context of being in Korea and learning about that. At the same time, I'm getting the answers that I had that was so neat and all the right timing. You know, but anyway,
yeah,
let me
South
tell
Korea
you.
Is one of the most South Korea is one of the most Christian nations on earth.
Yes, that was a really good experience.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let me get on this thing with Trump.
Okay, I was just gonna let you know we only have 7 minutes left, but
I'll be fast. Then.
If you get caught off, it's not my fault. Okay.
Okay, I'll just be real fast. I think on Trump, there's a chance. I think he knows that the way the country's going, his grandkids won't live the life that he's had and have the opportunity. That's what I think. But I think that God could be raising him up because he's out of all these politicians, and he's got problems, but out of all of these politicians, he's not a politician. And it could be that God is raising him up to turn the country back. And I think that he would listen to people. It's a possibility he would listen to people because more than the other ones have, because they've been there and haven't listened to people. There's also a chance that I wouldn't put my bank everything on him winning, because the way our politics work out, we've got this other party in there, this other guy that could take 10% and he lose.
Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, well, see, that, yeah, and that's the way politics works here, and because we got it set up as a two-party political system, and it's not meant to be that way according to the Constitution. But it works out that, that it's always the Republican that a third-party candidate robs votes from the Republican. So we know that the Republicans have been rejected by the people, the Democrats. While I disagree with both of them, but the Democrats are honest.
Bill Clinton, Bill Clinton was at risk in 1992, and Ross Perot got about 17% of the vote, and
Al Gore lost because of Ralph Nader
in 2000.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's always the Republican that loses, or the Republicans lose when the third party candidate, or if people sit out the election, it's the Republicans that lose. Because the Republican, here's the thing, the Democrats, whether you like them or not, they always give their goodies to their voters. The Republicans, from the Great Depression till now, other than the two terms of Reagan, has never done one thing they say they stand for as a party. They've never proposed a smaller budget, a smaller government.
Democrats?
The Republicans. The Republicans have never. Listen, you remember the 1994 contract with America, Newt Gingrich?
Yeah.
They had eight promises there, and not one of them did they pass.
I do have a master's in political science. I do feel like the Gingrich-Clinton deal was at least, effectively brokered in the sense that both aisles cooperated for an ultimate purpose. But ever since 2000, or probably even before that, the federal budget has it's become so big. I was going to say metastasized, but even George Bush was a huge spender. That I don't think that's the main issue. I think the main issue in our country is that we can't come together on any issues. Even in the last 2 days, they're analyzing what Trump is actually meaning by his comments on the Chicago dilemma of having 90 murders this summer.
Yes.
But
the thing, ma'am. If I disagree with you, you know where I stand. You don't have to agree with me. But if you agree with me and it's not where I stand, then I've lied to you. And that's the problem with our politics. They'll tell you what you want to hear, and then they don't deliver it. And then in the next election, they tell you the same thing again. And that's where the Democrats are strong, is that they do try hard to stick to their what they promise. And even with the two parties, we got this thing where Obama, his wife said, the ambassador of Kenya said he was born in Kenya. But then he later says he was born in, but he wrote it in his book. He said it. Michelle talked about the time they went back to his home place. The Kenyan ambassador was on a radio show the day that he got elected, and said that they're putting a monument in front of the hospital in Kenya.
Well, we only have 1 minute left, and you know what? I just want to say this. The father was only involved. Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
You can believe that, but Obama's father was only integral in his life for a brief period, and then the mother and grandparents raised him. So In my heart of hearts, I believe he was born in Hawaii, even though his mother went to Indonesia as a missionary. But I really think we have bigger fish to fry, bigger whales to fry, like Jonah.
Yeah.
John, I don't know if you're going to – can we have time to let John have a conclusion too?
Yeah.
Because now we only have 1 minute left. Go ahead, John.
Well, I was just listening, and I think that would be pretty good what he said. I think it's too bad we don't have a little more time for him to kind of go through some other points.
What's your first name, sir? You could
Nathan.
Call back
Nathan.
On our Sunday night show.
Yeah. What time
okay,
is your Sunday
our,
night show?
It's at 11 p.m. Central Time, and I believe you're on the East Coast, so it would be midnight on your time.
Okay, I'll be here next Sunday night.
Okay, yes, and by that time we'll have premium and we'll have a 90-minute show, so I really apologize.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I like your points on your salvation. The politics will have to contend with that later.